Good morning. Today's daf and Shabbos Nuntes. We are on the very bottom of Nunches Amud Beis. We are starting with the words Ela Marava. And in just in terms of a review of what we did yesterday, so I'm going to use the Rashi. Take a look at Rashi on the very top of Nunches Amud Aleph. I know we haven't gotten there yet, but Rashi does a wonderful job reviewing the Gemara up until this point in time. So it is a fantastic place to start today's daf. We are in the sugya of talking about bells and clappers. And we're talking about the usage of them on Shabbos, using them as something to wear on Shabbos. And it fits in well with our parak. Just a couple days ago, we started the sixth parak of Shabbos, and we're talking about what a woman can wear outside on Shabbos and what she cannot wear outside on Shabbos. Obviously, with the malacha of Otsah being one of the predominant malachas in this masechta, and getting so much playtime, so our parak now is sensitive to the idea that if a woman wears something out in Shabbos, and even if it's a tachshin, even if it's jewelry, but for various reasons she would be motivated to take it off and thereby carrying it for Amos and Rishus HaRabim. We already on the first day of the parak, that was on Nun Zayin Amud Aleph, went through the various reasons that Chachamim were concerned and worried that a woman's going to take off any particular article of jewelry. Just a small correction, it's not any article of jewelry, it's specific articles of jewelry, which the Mishnayos are highlighting exactly what she cannot wear. And why these specific articles of jewelry, so Tosus in the beginning of the parak says that there really are three causes of concern that the Chachamim had in terms of why she would take it off. Just to review the 3 points of Tosus, because it really is essential, it's critical to this entire parak. So Tosus back in Zayin Amud Aleph says, either one, she is tempted to show it off to her friends, or number two, if in the event she has to go to the mikveh, it would be a chatzitza, or number three, Kepeda. She's self-conscious about this particular piece of jewelry in front of other people. So for any one of those three reasons, by the way, the Kepeda we're going to go to tomorrow. That's going to be on Daf Samach. We'll talk a little bit about Kepeda. But for any one of these three reasons, the Chachamim were concerned and therefore banned a woman from wearing particular pieces of jewelry out into the Rishus HaRabim. With that in mind, we were discussing yesterday bells and clappers. Bells and clappers that are worn, is worn by animals, worn by people, worn by adults, worn by children. So at what point in time is it going to have the status of a tachshit? When is it going to be considered an article of clothing? So if you take a look now at the top Rashi in the Testament Aleph, so Rashi says, Umashmeh kol, let's skip the first line of Rashi as that is really relevant to the sugi itself. No, I don't want that as well. V'hashta itartza kulu. Rashi writes the third line down. Everything now, it goes as follows. Everything will be explained as follows. And Rashi says, number one, if the bells are worn by an animal, the bell is tahora below inbal, if the bell does not have a clapper. So in other words, as far as a bell around the neck of an animal without a clapper, so it is simply not a kli. It does not have the status of a kli. And so in terms of Tumah Tahara, by the way, just to organize Rashi really well, so in our heads we have to deal with the issues of Tumah Tahara, which is one point of consideration, and the other, of course, is whether or not an animal can go out with it on Shabbos. Happens to be that the Gemara is really paying more attention right now to Tumah Tahara, but at the same time, however, it's going to have bearing on whether or not an animal or a person can go out with it on Shabbos. So number one, we're talking about a bell without a clapper worn by an animal. So Rashi points out, "Kedikani b'masisa kamaisa delav manahu." So that is not a kli. It does not have the status of a kli. It's not mekabel tuma. A bell without a clapper worn by an animal is a totally dysfunctional item, and so therefore it does not have the status of a kli. Now let's remind each other that the animal cannot go out to the market, cannot go outside on Shabbos with a bell with or without a clapper, because it looks like you're taking the animal to the market. And so from a Marsayim standpoint, the animal cannot go out with it on Shabbos. But in terms of it having the status of a kli, it is not a kli. Uve invol tami keduk min b'braisa de inve mashal emana. Now an animal wearing a bell with a clapper, so Rashi says, this is what we'll call it number two. So this is going to be now considered a kli because now it has service, it has function. It now tells the shepherd, the owner, where exactly the animal is. And so then now it has service, now it has function, so therefore it is going to be a kli. Okay. So this is bells as worn by an animal. Bell without a clapper, bell with a clapper. Rashi continues, Vaha Adam Gadol, af below invol tame dilatachshit hu, velo bay invol, vahainu diktani bekamaisa de mekablin tumah. Rashi then says, well, let's talk about an adult wearing a bell. Even if it does not have a clapper, it is going to be considered a tachshit. Accessorizing clothing, sometimes they had bells accessorizing clothing. And so if you have an adult wearing a bell as part of his clothing, so that is going to have the status of a tachshit, therefore it is going to be a kli, and therefore it is going to be mekabel tumah. And Rashi says, number four, udiktanim, now as far as little children are concerned wearing bells, the only reason why a little child will be wearing a bell is to signal to the parents where exactly the child is. And the only time the bell worn by a child is going to have use and function is only going to be where the bell has a clapper. And that's the next one of Rashi, and we'll call this number four. Udiktanim de la kala avid, kibulehu de lo kabel, below invel, kediktani ein lahem invel tahorim. Vishaloha ya la invel me olam, I'm sorry, vishaloha ya invel me olam de lo nigmar malachtan. So a bell without a clapper worn by a child is not going to be mekabel tumah, because for the child, the only reason why he would be wearing it is only to produce a sound so that the parents know where the child is, and so therefore it's not mekabel tumah. And finally, Nadlu in Balayim bein lefnei tumah bein la'achar tumah temeim delo nishtar b'kashir. Let's say you have a bell with a clapper, and the clapper broke off. So we learned at the end of yesterday's daf that that bell is still going to be mekabel tumah, even though the clapper broke off. Okay. And now, so we just reviewed all of yesterday's daf with this one Rashi. Truth of the matter is, the sugya already started a little bit on Zion, but we just reviewed basically all of yesterday's daf. With that stated, so we left ourselves with an open-ended question. Let's reset the question, and then let's continue in the Gemara. The Gemara asked a question yesterday that we just learned together, that a bell that had a clapper, and the clapper broke off, so this bell is still going to be mekabel tumah. And the Gemara's question yesterday was really simple. Why should that be? Once the clapper goes off, so the bell no longer has usage, it no longer has any purpose to it. It doesn't produce a sound. And it's still going to be mekabel tumah. We have a general rule throughout Tumah and Tahara, that once the kli is nishtaber, once the kli is broken, so then the kli is no longer going to be mekabel tumah. And if the kli was tameh, the kli's tumah is now going to fly off. So, if the clapper falls off of the bell, why is the bell now still going to be mekabel tumah? That was the Gemara's question yesterday. That's what the Brisa taught us. So it is a given that the kli is no longer mekabel tumah. The question is, why not? Why is it not mekabel tumah? So you remember in yesterday's daf, we went through already the suggestion of Abaye. Abaye says, because it's not that hard to put the clapper back into the bell. It's not that hard, Abaye says, even I could do it. I meaning me, the Magichir. Even I could do it. I could put the clapper back into the bell, and so since the hedgehog, since anybody can put the clapper back into the bell, so therefore it's not really considered broken. That is Abaye's answer. The Gemara does not support this answer at all. The Gemara at the end of yesterday's daf patently rejected this answer. We quoted the brises regarding the pair of scissors and the plane used by the carpenter. Well, while the item is made up of two pieces and they're not together, those are considered two distinct items. So it's true that yes, I could put back a pair of scissors together and I can attach the razor back to the carpenter's plane. And it's true that I could put the clapper back into the bell. But while detached, they are not considered one single unit. That was clear. And so the Gemara patently rejected Abaye's answer. So now that Abaye's answer gets rejected, so why is it? If the bell loses its clapper, it's still going to be mekabel tumah. So Ela Marava, so here we are now in the very bottom of Menuches Amud Beis, picking it up right where we left off yesterday. And now we go to the top of Menuches Amud Aleph. Hol v'ray la'kisho agabe cheres. So Rava's answer is because you could still use it as a bell. It doesn't have a clapper in it. Okay. But it's still a hollow metal instrument. So what you'll do is you'll bang it against a earthenware shard. You'll bang it against something hard. And it could still produce sound. So it still has the utility of a bell. That is Rava's answer. And the Gemara quotes Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Chanina, who gives the same answer. Rabbi Yochanan, on the other hand, gives a different answer. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Holverai Lagamea Bo Mayim Litinok. So Rabbi Yochanan says, well, look, let's be a little bit creative over here. The bell doesn't have a clapper anymore. Fine, but what does it look like if I turned it upside down? It looks like a little cup. So what we could do is we could take the bell, turn it upside down, and use it as a cup. And if the child wants to take a drink, so just simply, and I run out of cups, so give them the bell now that doesn't have the clapper in it anymore. And Rav Yochanan says, since it still has function, still has usage, albeit, and this is going to be an important point as we go forward in the Gemara, albeit the usage right now that it has is not going to be what it originally was. Originally, its utility was the fact that it produced a sound. And now without a clapper, okay, it can't produce a sound. But I could use it for something else. My creativity allows me to make other usages of it. And Rabbi Yochanan says that would be fine. And that's why it's still going to be Mekabel Tuma. Now the Gemara says, Rabbi Yochanan Labai Meim Malach Rishon V'Hatanya. Now the Gemara says, now wait 1 second. We're going to show you over the course of the upcoming Mishnah and statement of Rabbi Yochanan that for Rabbi Yochanan, in order for a Kli to maintain its Tuma, it must have its original function. And if it does not have its original function, so then it's not going to be Mekabel Tuma anymore. And we're going to make this point very clearly, and obviously that's going to be problematic, because Rav Yochanan's argument that the bell without a clapper is still going to be Mekabel Tuma is because you could change its usages, as we're going to see in a moment. For Rav Yochanan, that's not enough. For a Kli to still be Mekabel Tuma, it has to have its original usage. And we're going to prove that right now. The Italian, the Gemara says, let's consider the following brayso of a chol Kli Asher Yeshev Alav. And this psukim in the Torah is a description of Tumas Medras. And we've discussed this numerous times throughout Shas. When you have somebody who has a Tumah Hayotze Megufo, a Tumah that comes out of their body, discharges out of their body, Azava, Azava, Anida Yoledes. So for these people, could be a man, could be a woman. Some of them can only be a woman. But for these people, have Tumah Hayotze Megufo. So they are an Avatuma, they are a source of Tumah, and they have a very specific transference of Tumah, and that's what's called Tumas Medras. And that means to say that when they're sitting now down on an item that is meant for sitting, and that's a critical point over here, when they're sitting on an item that's meant for sitting, that item now is going to be Tameh to the same degree that they are. Normally, transference of Tumah means that the Tumah is going to drop down a level. But over here, when it comes to Tumas Medras, so the item itself now is going to be an Ava Tumah, just like the person who sat down on it. Now, Yachol, now we're going to go to the Gemara, and the Gemara is now considering the following. Yachol kafasav yeshev aleha, kapatarkav yeshev aleha, yehetame. I might have the following thought. Let's say I took a barrel, and what I want to do right now, or a large mixing bowl, and I just want to right now sit down, so what I'll do is I'll turn it over, and I'll sit down on it. Is it going to have the status of being a Tumas Medras? So Tamalam Rashi Yeshev Alavazav, Mishim Yuchali Shiva, Yatazesha Omrim Lo, Amor Vinasa Machtenu. So the Gemara says no, because we have a specific halacha when it comes to Tumas Medras. It has to be a chair and only a chair. If let's say I'm sitting down in a bowl and somebody comes over to me and says, you know what, I need that bowl right now, get up. Okay, I'm going to have to get up, meaning the bowl is primarily not functioning as a chair. The bowl is primarily functioning as a bowl. And even though my creativity allows me to use it as a chair right now, but that's not its primary purpose. And so we've just learned together when it comes to Tumas Medras, a chair or a bed is only going to have that status when its only usage is not going to be of a chair or of a bed. If we're using it for something else, it's not going to have the status of Tumas Medras. Now, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, B'midrasos Omerim, Amod V'nasem Lachtenu, V'in Omerim, B'tamei Meis, Amod V'nasem Lachtenu. On this brisa that we just learned together, so now there's going to be the following debate amongst the Amoraim. Rav Elazar is of the opinion that this halacha is limited to Tumas Medras. But when it comes to Tumas Meis, we do not say Amod V'nasem Lachtenu. We do not say, hey, do me a favor, get up because I need that bowl right now. Meaning that when it comes to any other transference of Tumah, so as long as the Kli functions, even though I'm using it for a different function, according to Rabbi Elazar, so then it's going to have the status of a Kli. So you see that Rabbi Elazar has a lot of room in terms of, let's start again. For Rabbi Elazar, if once we leave the world of Tumas Medras and we go into any other realm of Tumah, Tumas Meis, but I assume that according to Rabbi Elazar would be other Tumas as well, so we see that the definition of a Kli is flexible. It could be that it is a Kli that is for its primary function, but it could also be a Kli simply because they can make other usages of it. That is all the Shita of Rav Elazar. But now we turn our attention to Rav Yochanan. Rav Yochanan is going to disagree with Rav Elazar. Rav Yochanan Amar Afar Me B'Tamei Meis Amar B'Nasem Lachteinu. Even when it comes to Tumas Meis, we are still going to have this definition of Amod B'Nasem Lachteinu, get up because we need to do our work. Meaning that according to Rav Yochanan, not just by Tumas Medras, but by other Tumas as well, if we have a Kli, it will only have the definition of the Kli if it has and maintains its original function. But if I'm using it for something else, and I cannot use it for its original function, it no longer defines itself as a kli. Here's what we just learned together. We just learned that according to Rav Yochanan, a kli is only a kli when it has its original function. And that's not just limited to Tumas Medrash, that's also true by Tumas Meis as well. And so clearly what we just learned together is that for Rav Yochanan, a kli only has the status of a kli if it has usage of its original functioning. Okay, now that obviously poses a problem. Because in the discussion that we're having in our Gemara over here regarding a bell and a clapper, once the clapper is taken out, what did Rav Yochanan say? You know what? It no longer serves as a bell, but you could turn it over upside down and you could use it as a makeshift cup. Creative, but now we have an inconsistency in Rav Yochanan. We just learned together that according to Rav Yochanan, it has to be of its original usage. And meanwhile, while the bell and clapper, Rav Yochanan didn't say that. You could be creative, and as long as it has other usages. That's what's called a steer within Rav Yochanan. So the Gemara over here, Epoch Kamaisa. So the Gemara over here takes out its largest weapon in terms of answering a question, and that is that we're going to have to switch it around. We're going to have to take the original part of today's shiur, the discussion between Rav Yochanan and Rava. How do you answer for the bell and clapper? And we're going to flip around those two shitas. Which means that Rava is the one who's giving the answer of turning the bell upside down and using it as a makeshift cup. And it's Rav Yochanan says no. That the reason why the bell is without the clapper still has the definition of a bell, still has the definition of a kli, is because I could bang it against a hard item and it could still produce a sound. Ah, okay, now everything is good. But of course what we had to do is we had to flip around shitas, and that obviously now challenges the Masorah that was originally presented to us. But the Gemara says, but we're going to do so, so that Rav Yochanan now is consistent. So the Gemara says, fine, but you know what? Look, what you're doing is you're flipping around. So if we're going to flip around, why, instead of flipping around the Rav Yochanan Rava response to the bell without a clapper, why not flip around the shitas of Rav Elazar and Rav Yochanan as they're commenting on the Braisa regarding Amod v'nasa melachteinu? And so we'll have the consistency, but how did you know which machlokas to flip? So the Gemara says, Hashemina leila Rav Yochanan debai me'in malach rishona. So the Gemara says, I'll tell you how we knew it, because we're corroborating it based on another piece of information. And that is the following, that we learned in the Mishnah. This is the Mishnah in Kalin. Sakna shal behema shal matechas tameh. If I have a shoe that was designed for an animal, now in of itself, a shoe for an animal is not a kli, and is not going to be mekabel tuma, but if it's a metal shoe made for an animal, it is in fact going to be mekabel tuma. Now, the question goes as follows, Amai chaze, well, what good is it? And the fact that it services an animal in of itself is not enough to give it the status of being a kli. In order for it to be a kli, there has to be that this item is going to be used by humans. So what exactly about an animal shoe, right? I'll call it a horseshoe, but in just a moment, you'll see it's not exactly a horseshoe. Whatever. However it looks like. But the Gemara says, "Lamai chazi, what good is it? What usage does it have?" So I'm a Rav Reili Strauss b'mayim b'melchama. So Rav is of the opinion that you could take this animal shoe, and in a pinch, let's say you're out in the battlefield, so you could use it in order to drink something. Now, admittedly, by the way, we're not discussing the most pleasant activity, taking a shoe that's worn by an animal, but you're in battle, and you know obviously resources are extraordinarily limited. And so you'll take the shoe and you'll use it as a makeshift cup. Okay, that's how it could be used by a human. That's according to Rav. Rabbi Chanina Amar Rai Lasoch Bo Shem HaMelchama. Rabbi Chanina says that you could put oil in it. And in the event that you need to rub some oil into your skin back then, that was considered not a luxury, but that was just simply basics in terms of rubbing oil into the skin. So you could do that with this animal shoe. That's going to be our second answer. The Gemara in just a moment is going to ask, Rav and Rabbi Chanina are basically saying that they can be used as a makeshift cup. What's the difference between Rav and Rabbi Chanina? It sounds like two different answers. The Gemara is going to ask that question. But in the meantime, let's highlight now the third answer, and then that's, of course, Rav Yochanan. Rav Yochanan, Rabbi Shah, Sheborech Menakrav, Menichu Beraglav, Ratz Al Kotzav, Al Habar Kanin. Look, let's say right now I need to run in the battlefield, or I need to run out of the battlefield. And right now, in order for me to get from point A to point B, I'm going to have to walk over some really rough surfaces, thorns, thistles. So what I could do now is I could take the shoe. Now, I know the shoe is designated for an animal. But right now, in a time of need, I could take the shoe, I could put it on, and I could use it as my own shoes. What did we just learn together? That Rav Yochanan says that the animal shoe is going to be considered a kli because I could use it. But let's not stop there. I could use it as a shoe. So we just learned together that according to Rav Yochanan, the only way that a kli maintains its status of being a kli is only if it has original usage. It was intended as a shoe, and it could still be used as a shoe. So you see that according to Rav Yochanan, when something has original usage, then and only then it defines as a kli. And so now we go back to the point that we made earlier regarding which of the positions are we going to flip. So now that we see that Rav Yochanan here as well says it has to be me'ein malacha. It has to be that the usage has to be from the original usage. So now we have two statements of Rav Yochanan. We have a third statement of Rav Yochanan that doesn't conform to this viewpoint. So that allows us now to take that machlokus, the original one of the shir today, and flip it around so that now all Rav Yochanans are consistent. Fine. And so we have Rav Yochanan coming out now that in order for a kli to have the definition of a kli, even if it is somewhat broken, but as long as it has original usage, it's going to be a kli. This is the shita of Rav Yochanan, as the Gemara now has just concluded. And now the Gemara just wants to tie up a quick loose end. My ben Rav Rav Chanina. We talked about the animal shoe. It's going to be a kli. Why? What human usage does it have? So Rav and Rav Chanina, Rav says you could drink from it, and Rav Chanina says you could put oil in it. So the Gemara says, what's the difference between Rav and Rav Chanina? You could be now demais. So the Gemara says, well, let's imagine the shoe is dirty. Now, my imagination leads me to the conclusion that it's always dirty. But let's just imagine that the shoe is particularly dirty. So then we'd have an afkamina between Rav and Rav Chanina. According to Rav, you would not use it to drink from. But according to Rav Chanina, you would still use it to put oil in. The oil's not going into your mouth. The oil is being rubbed on your body. Okay, so the kli is a little bit dirty. And bein Rav Yochanan Rav Chanina, kebeinayu diyakir. And now what would be the difference between Rav Chanina and Rav Yochanan? Now, it's a funny question of the Gemara because one of the most basic differences between them is that Rav Yochanan's definition of what a kli is. A kli is only a kli when it has original usage. And Rabbi Chanina says, no, it doesn't have to have original usage. You could be creative, and as long as it has any usage, that would be good enough. So that already is a basic difference between them, but practically speaking, how would this play out? So the Gemara says, well, let's say that the shoe in question over here, this animal shoe in question, is particularly heavy. That's the Gemara's expression of yakir. Yakir means honor, but in this case it means kveda. It means heaviness, right? Kavon and kveda, by the way, interesting how they have the same root. But anyway, here it means that it's heavy, and the idea over here is that if the animal shoe is particularly heavy, so you could still use it as a receptacle for oil, but to put it on your own feet in order to run away from the battle, if it's particularly heavy, you're not getting that far that quickly, and you won't, and it no longer serves as a kli. That would be a practical difference between Rabbi Chanina and Rabbi Yochanan. That kind of takes us to the first half of today's daf. We are now on the very bottom as we continue defining the items in the Mishnah. The Mishnah back on Zion went through the items that a woman cannot go with on Shabbos, even though they are jewelries, they are pieces of ornaments accessorizing the woman. Nevertheless, a woman cannot go out with the items that were listed in the Mishnah on Shabbos. And again, going back to the beginning of our shir today, the Chachamim had a concern that she may end up taking it off and carrying it in Irishus Aravim. One of the things that were mentioned in the Mishnah is the ear shel Zahav. Now, the ear shel Zahav literally means city of gold. What does that mean? She's wearing a city of gold. That's the Gemara's question. So, v'lo be ear shel Zahav, my be ear shel Zahav, Rabba b'brachanam, Rav Yochanan, Yerushalayim didahava. So the Gemara quotes the Yeshita Rav Yochanan that we're talking about, Yerushalayim, the city of gold. Now, that doesn't really help us much. All we did is we took the Hebrew and we turned it into the Aramaic. But the Gemara says, K'da'avale Rabbi Akiva devasaihu. You know, it's like the one that Rabbi Akiva made for his wife. Rashi over here quotes the Gemara Nedarim. Rashi just simply cites the Gemara Nedarim. He doesn't quote the Gemara Nedarim. The Gemara Nedarim talks about Rabbi Akiva and the early years of his marriage together with his wife. He married the daughter of Kaba Savua. The Kaba Savua himself was an extraordinarily wealthy man, but he was not particularly happy that his son-in-law was Rabbi Akiva. Because at the time, he wasn't the Rabbi Akiva that we know historically. He was an earlier version of Rabbi Akiva, poor and unlearned. And so he was not happy. Anyway, Rabbi Akiva and Rachel, in their early years of marriage, so they lived an extraordinarily poor life. And they slept on a bed of hay, the Gemara Nedarim describes. And in the morning, Rabbi Akiva would take the hay, pieces of hay, out of the hair of his wife. And he made the following promise, that if in the event that we ever get into money, So I'm going to give you an article of jewelry, a significant article of jewelry. And over the course of the years, so in fact, Rabbi Akiva did get into money. And he eventually did buy his wife this luxurious item, which was the Yerushalayim Shel Zahav. Okay, now the story is wonderful, right? It's a beautiful story. Nevertheless, it also doesn't help us in terms of giving us a better description of what it is. We take a look at the Tosfos on the bottom of the previous Amud, Velobi Ir Shel Zahav. So Tosfos over here says, Tosfos actually says what it's not. So it sounds like from Rashi, that we're looking at some sort of crown that had a skyline of Yerushalayim on it. Something along those lines. Okay, that is, Tosfos himself is not thrilled with that pshat. Tosfos gives a slightly different pshat. Anyway, we're talking about some sort of ornament that's worn on the head. Okay. Tanu Rabbana, we are now on the very top of Nuntes Amud Beis, and the Gemara quotes a Braisa discussing this very piece of jewelry. Lo seitz eisha be'ir shel zahav im yatzeh chayeves chatas divrei Reb Meir. So we start with the sheet of Reb Meir. Reb Meir takes a really, really hardline position regarding the wearing of this item on Shabbos. Reb Meir is of the opinion that if a woman goes out with it on Shabbos, would be subject to a chiyuv chatas. It's an iser d'oraisa for him to do so. In a moment, the Gemara is going to tell us that according to Reb Meir, it's a masui. It's simply considered a burden. Now, it's really hard to understand the sheet of Reb Meir, meaning where they're going, well, let's just read on a little bit further, and I'll try to make sense of Reb Meir, but it's going to be very challenging. The Chachamim Amrim Lo Seitzev Im Yatzeh Sapatura. Now, according to the Chachamim, a woman may not go out with it on Shabbos, but if she does, she would be exempt from being a carbon, meaning it's an Issa Derabanan, but it's not the Malacha of carrying, because it's an accessory, it's jewelry, it's Tachshit. And Rabbi Eliezer Omer Yotzeh Isha Be'ir Shel Zav Lechatchila. And Rabbi Eliezer is of the opinion that a woman may go out with it, with this this piece of jewelry, even Lechatchila, even from a primary standpoint. Meaning there's no issue with it whatsoever according to Rabbi Eliezer. And Ben Mai Kamiflagis, the Gemara now wants to give svaras to these machlokas, Rabbi Meir Safar Masuihu. So according to Rabbi Meir, it's considered a burden. Rabbanan Savri Tachshit Hu, Demo Shafa Machvilei, Va'asila Asuye. According to the Chachamim, it is a Tachshit, but the Chachamim were worried that she's going to carry it in the Rishus Rabbim, take it off to show it to her friends, and forget that it's now in her hands, not on her head, and thereby carry it 4 amas in the Rishus Rabbim. And so therefore it's going to be Asumid Rabbanan. And Rabbi Eliezer Savramanda Darka La Meipak Be'ir Shel Zahav, Isha Chashuva. And according to Rabbi Eliezer, who typically wears this type of jewelry? Only a woman of importance and significance. And for her, she doesn't need to show off, meaning, if we could say it like this, in her entire mahos, her entire essence is that she is in a position of showing off. But because she's Nisha Chashuva, because she's such a prominent woman, so she's not going to be tempted to take it off and to show it to her friends. She is a woman of significance. That's the only type of women who wear this type of ornament. And so therefore what we have over here are 3 sheets amongst the Tanaim in terms of the allowance. Obviously our Mishnah is going to be in line with the Chachamim, that it is a Tachshit, it's just Asur Midrabban in order to wear it out on Shabbos, obviously. Now the Shita Rabbi Eliezer, it's an interesting Shita, in that basically we're making a distinction between different types of jewelries, which is fine. We already did that back in the Mishnah, but what we're saying according to Rabbi Eliezer is because the type of woman who wears this is not the type that takes it off, so therefore according to Rabbi Eliezer, it's mutter legamri. The Shita Rabbi Meir, admittedly, it is really the most difficult position to try to defend. Because Rabbi Meir says it's a burden, what does that mean it's a burden? It's a jewelry, it's a piece of jewelry. And maybe you'll tell me that not many women are wearing this type of jewelry. It's very special. It's very unique. Only people who can afford it are going to get it. Okay, that may be true, but for the people who can afford it, it's not considered a piece of jewelry. And he describes it as being a masui. So admittedly, the shita of Reb Meir is an extraordinarily difficult position to try to defend. But nevertheless, that's shita's Reb Meir. Okay. Continuing now in the Gemara, we're on in Testament Base, we're about 10 lines from the top of the Amud, and we are now going to be discussing various headbands that were worn by women. It's something like a tiara, and again, not exactly sure what it is. It is not as fancy as Yerushalayim Shel Zahav. Yerushalayim Shel Zahav is a piece of jewelry that's only worn by the most prominent of women. This is something that presumably is worn by most women in terms of jewelry, and it was some sort of headpiece. It wasn't her hair covering, meaning it was something in addition to her hair covering. The Gemara simply describes it as kalila. And this kalila, as we're going to be discussing now for a good part of the remainder of today's daf, so it's going to be a discussion in terms of whether or not a woman can go out with it on Shabbos or she cannot. And in a moment, we're going to see there are different types of kalilas. So let's go start the sugya. Kalila, in terms of the wearing of this tiara, Rav Asur Shmuel Shari. Rav says it's prohibited for a woman to go out with it on Shabbos. Shmuel's of the opinion that's permitted. Now, the Gemara before analyzing, the Gemara breaks down this kalila into two different types. The anischa, kuli amalo pligi da'asar. If this tiara is made out of metal, gold or silver, so then everyone is agreed in agreement that it's going to be asr. She will be tempted to show it off to her friends as she's in the Rishus HaRabim, and thereby maybe carrying it for Amos in the Rishus HaRabim. And ki pligi de arokta. The debate between Rav and Shmuel is only regarding one that was embroidered. Now, it was embroidered, and it has little pieces of jewelry in it, but basically it is primarily an embroidery. Marsavar anischa ikar, umarsavar arokta ikar. Now, even though it does have precious stones in it or pieces of metal in it, the question now between Rav and Shmuel is what is really considered the ikar. So according to Rav, who says that it is asur, so he says, look, the stones that are embedded within the embroidery, that's really the ikar. And Shmuel says that it's mutter, so he says, look, it's fundamentally an embroidered piece, and she's not going to be tempted to show it off to her friends. That is one version of the debate. Rav Ashi Masne Lekula. Rav Ashi, however, provides for us another version of the debate, and that's as follows. Da arokta dekuleam lo pligi deshari. If it's an embroidered tiara, an embroidered headband, so that's something where everyone's in agreement that a woman can wear it on Shabbos. It is really an embroidered piece. She's not going to want to show it off to her friend. Ki pligi da anischa, the debate between Rav and Shmuel is regarding a tiara that's made out of either gold or silver. Marsavar demoshafa machve v'asil asuye. Marsavar mandark lemepe beklila isha chashuva. V'isha chashuva lo shafa machve. And the debate explains the Gemara goes like this. The one that says that it's Asr, that would be Rav, so he's of the opinion that, look, it's made out of metal, it's made out of gold, it's made out of silver, and she will be tempted to show it off to her friends. Masha Enkin, according to Shmuel, who's Mekel, he says, no. Who is the kind of woman that wears this? The kind of woman who wears this is a prominent woman. And a prominent woman is not going to show off her jewelry to her friends in the street. In other words, her prominence is what already provides for herself. Enough attention. She doesn't need to take off pieces of jewelry and show it off to her friends. Okay, so the Gemara says now this is the second version of the debate. Within the second version of the debate, so that means that if it's an embroidered headband, everyone would say that that's okay. And the only debate is when the tiara, the kalila, is made up of metal. Amalei Rav Shmuel Bar Chana Li Rav Yosef Beferish Amar Lam Mishmei Derav Kalila Shari. Now. Rav Shmuel bar Berchana says the following to Rav Yosef. Let's remind each other. Rav Yosef at one point in his life was healthy, had the ability to see, and then Rav Yosef went through a terrible illness where he lost his sight. He also lost his memory as well. And in this terrible illness that he suffered, so when he recovered from the illness, he relearned all of his learning. And throughout Shas, we always find the Gemara telling where the students were learning together with Rav Yosef after he recovered from his illness, and they reminded of things that he taught them. Now, obviously, this is it's such a difficult thing to conceive that Rav Yosef keeps getting reminded over the course of his life of things that he taught. But nevertheless, the point is that okay, right? It was a struggle, but he pushed through. He persevered. And he learned despite the fact that this is now going to be the second time in his life where he's learning anew. And so his students said to him, this is what you taught us. You taught us that according to Rav, the wearing of the kalila is going to be shari, it's going to be permitted. Now, Rashi observes over here, now that's inconsistent with what we said earlier, but Rashi observes over here, no, it's not inconsistent. Because in the Rav Ashi version of the debate, everybody agrees that if it's an embroidered piece, so that is going to be mutter. Rav would agree to that as well. So Rashi points out over here, what we're going to simply say is that this Rav Yosef Limud that he taught before he got sick, so that's going on the Rav Ashi version. And Rashi says, you see that the Rav Ashi version is the more accepted version. And so an embroidered piece, Rav says that it's mutter. So Amalei Rav Larav Asagav Rabba Arichel and Ardam Umala Vidarsh Kli Lashari. They said to Rav that a great person, a tall person, came to Narada, and he was limp, and he told everybody that Kli Lashari, that the wearing of this tiara is in fact going to be permitted. There wasn't any more information given to Rav in terms of who the identity of this person is. And Rav is going to do some basic deduction. Amar man gavar Rav aricha de'idla. So Rav now is thinking to himself, oh, let me think about this. Really tall man, just arrived in Nahardah first time. That means that he left Eretz Yisrael in order to come to Bavel to Nahardah. So who was it? So Rav comes to the conclusion it was Levi. Now, Rav Levi, they had a history, meaning Rav learned in Eretz Yisrael as well. He learned under Rebbe. He learned under his uncle, Rebbe Chiya. And then, over the course of his life, for reasons which the Gemara never tells us why, so he left Eretz Yisrael and he goes to Bavel. Okay. And he settles in Bavel. Rav settles in the town of Surah. Anyway, now Rav hears about another Amora. He was very tall and he comes to Nahardah. And he tells everybody that the wearing of Kli is mutter. So Rav arrives at the conclusion that it's Levi. So Rav says, okay, now there's more deduction coming up. And that is the following. Now, in order to understand this next part of the deduction of Rav, so we just need a little bit of background information. Let's go to Rashi. Rashi over here, Nachna Shei the Rabbi Afas. I know we haven't hit that yet in the Gemara, but Rashi over here goes through the Gemara in Ksuvos. I'm going to read the Rashi inside, but Maseches Ksuvos Ba'anose. So Rashi quotes the Gemara in Ksuvos in Perek Hanose. I'm reading the Chishach of Rebbe. It recounts the last days of Rebbe Yehuda Hanasi. And as part of his tzava, as part of his last will and testament, he said the following. Amar Rabbi Chanina Bar Chama Yeshev Barosh. So he tapped Rabbi Chanina Bar Chama to become the next Rosh Hashiva immediately after his own death. V'lo kiba alav Rabbi Chanina Shaya Rabbi Efes Gadol Mimenu Shtei Shana. Now Rabbi Chanina demurred. He did not accept the appointment. Now, admittedly, it's a little bit hard for me to explain why it is that when he was tapped to become the Rosh Yeshiva, and Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi instructed him to do so. So how could he decline? It's not perfectly clear to me, but he did. And his sensitivity went to Rabbi Afas. Rabbi Afas was greater than him, was older than him by 2 years, and he felt just simply to be inappropriate for him to take the position of Rosh Yeshiva when there's Rabbi Afas who's 2 years older than him. V'yasav Rabbi Afas bereisha mitoch shayah Rabbi Chanina chashuv lo nichnas lebeis medrashav ayayoshe bechutz. And so now Rabbi Afas is a Rosh Yeshiva. Now on the other hand, Rabbi Chanina didn't want to go into the Beis Medrash itself. Rabbi Chanina was of the position that if I go in there, I'm gonna deflect attention away from Rabbi Afas. So he at that point in time made himself like a mini exile. He remained outside of the Beis Medrash. Now, Mishum Kvodo Yashav Lo Levi Etzlo. Now, Rabbi Chanina is sitting outside the Beis Medrash, and Levi felt, look, this is Rabbi Chanina, he's a great man. He was tapped by Rebbe to become the next Rosh Yeshiva. So Levi, at that point in time, also put himself into this mini-exile and remained outside the Beis Medrash together with Rabbi Chama. With all that stated, if everyone can remember now, all the personalities that are involved in the story, so now Rav hears about this guy coming to Nahardah, darshaning that the wearing of the tiara is mutter, and so the first conclusion he arrived at is that it's Levi. Oh, if it's Levi, so now he is in his head reconstructing what must have happened. Shma mina, we're back in the Gemara, we're picking it up right where we left off. Shma mina nachshed Rabbi Afas v'yasev Rabbi Chanina bereishen, v'lo havel inish lelevi lemesev gabe v'kasi lahacha. So here now is Rav's reconstruction of what must have happened. Here's what happened. It must be that Rabbi Afas passed away, and Rabbi Chanina now assumed the position of being Rosh Yeshiva. Levi, who was at the time sitting by the side of Rabbi Chanina outside the Beis Medrash, has nobody to sit with. So now Levi has nobody to sit with, so he left Eretz Yisrael in order to come to Bavel. That is his reconstruction of the story. Now the Gemara says, now there are other possibilities of what happened, and the Gemara itself notes, V'duma nachna she'ed Rabbi Chanina v'Rabbi Afas k'de kai, v'lo havi inish l'levi l'meisav gabei, v'kasi l'acha. So the Gemara says, well, why don't we suggest the following? Why don't we say that it's just simply that Rabbi Chanina died? Rabbi Afas is still the Rosh Yeshiva, and now that Levi has nobody to sit next to outside, so he comes to Bavel. Couldn't that have been the case? So the Gemara says, no, it couldn't have been. Imisa, the Gemara says, number one, Imisa de Rabbi Chanina Shachav Levi le Rabbi Afas Mechav Hava Chayfale. So first of all, says the Gemara, that if in fact Rabbi Chanina died, so then Levi would have just simply gone into the base medrash and would be subservient to that of Rabbi Afas. That's number one. Number two, says the Gemara, Vesu, de Rabbi Chanina lo sagi de lo malak de chihava de nicha nashe de Rabbi Amar, Chanina be Rabbi Chama yaseh berosh, uksiv behu batzadikim vatikzor, Omer vayakem lach. And the second point is that Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, before he died, he tapped Rabbi Chanina as being the next Rosh Yeshiva. Well, in doing so, that means that Rabbi Chanina is going to become the Rosh Yeshiva. Right? The pasuk in Eov says, Vatikzor, Omer, Vayakem Lach. When a tzaddik makes a gzera, it is going to be, it's going to come into fruition. And so therefore, if Rabbi Chanina isn't tapped as Rosh Yeshiva, that means Rabbi Chanina will become the Rosh Yeshiva. So it's impossible to entertain that he declined the offer of being Rosh Yeshiva, handed over to Rabbi Afas, and then he himself is never going to become the Rosh Yeshiva. That's just simply an untenable position. So by definition, Rabbi Chanina is going to be the Rosh Yeshiva, and the only way he can become the Rosh Yeshiva is only through the death of Rabbi Afas. So therefore, Rav concludes this is what happened. His version of his reconstruction of the story is in fact the only logical conclusion. Okay. And that was an extraordinarily long introduction, great, but long introduction, to now the following. Darish Levi ben Arda, Kli L'Sharei. So Levi in Arda Darshin, that the wearing of the Klila would be Mutter. Anafik Esen Varba Klila Mikula Narda. Now, how many women were wearing the Klila out in Arda? The answer is a total of 24 women. I mean, Arda was not a particularly wealthy city. Not that many women can actually afford the Klila. And so therefore, only a total of 24 women were able to wear it in Narda. And now, Darish Rava Bar Avua ben Mechuza Klila Sharei. Now, Rava Bar Avua in Mechuza, we know Mechuza was a much wealthier town in Bava. And Rava Bar Avua told everybody that it's Mutter. And Venafku Tamne Sre Klila Mechada Mavoa. Just in one block, 18 women were now wearing the Klila on Shabbos. And that was only in one block, in one city block. Okay, they were wealthier in Mechuza. I'm Rav Yehuda, I'm a Rav Shmuel. Rav Yehuda quotes in the name of Rav Shmuel. Now, here, the attribution is a little suspect, because Rav Yehuda was a student of Shmuel. So over here, Rav Shmuel is quoting Rav Yehuda. Well, it kind of makes sense. It's Rav Shmuel, so let's assume that this is not the Shmuel of noted fame throughout the Gemara. It's another Amora sharing the same name, okay, who obviously is a student of Rav Yehuda. Anyway, Kamra Sharei. The Kamra would be permissible to wear on Shabbos. Now, Ika Damri de Arkusa. Before we go on the Gemara, what is this Kamra? If you take a look at Rashi over here, Rashi describes it as Abneid Chashuv. Yesh Shosin Aso Tas Shal Zahav, V'yesh Shosin Aso Ritzua Mishabot Zahav Avanim Kavuos. So we're describing some sort of belt, right? And it was a luxury item. It was a luxury belt. And sometimes, says Rashi, it's made out of metal. Sometimes it's embroidered with the gold embroidered into it. Now, Ika d'Amri d'Arkusa, the Amr of Safra Mida d'Havet tells Muzheves. Now, in one version, we're talking about the belt that's embroidered, and it's got gold as part of the embroidery, and it's no different than Tals Muzheves. Meaning that if you're wearing a garment that has gold embroidered in it, everyone's going to be in agreement that that is just simply malbush, that's clothing, and obviously you're allowed to wear it on Shabbos. Now, Iga da'ami da'anizcha, the Amir of Safra, mida da'ave avnesha malachim. Now, some say that this belt, this luxury belt, is actually made up of metal. And it's no different than a belt worn by kings. And so, therefore, we're allowed to wear it as well. So, Rashi over here invokes an idea. And we're going to see this idea later in the Masechta. Rashi says that the entire belt is made out of metal. Kings wear it. And Rashi writes, Kol Yisrael b'nei malachim ru'uyim lo. As far as the Jewish people are concerned, the Jewish people are royalty. And the fact that kings wear metal belts, well, we do as well. We have that kind of stature. Okay, so there are two versions of what the construction of this luxury belt is made out of. Rav Yehuda says it is mutter to wear it out on Shabbos. Amalei Ravina Ravashi Kamra Ilave Hamya Mai. What if, let's say, you are wearing a quote-unquote regular belt, right? Simple leather belt, and now you're putting this luxury belt on top of it. So Amar Lei Trei Amana Kamarta, he says, oh, now you're talking about two belts. Now, the answer is only a rhetorical answer. Oh, you're talking about two belts? And the Gemara does not qualify or explain the answer any better. And so it is not clear from the Gemara whether or not he was endorsing it and saying that it was okay to wear a luxury belt on top of a regular belt, or basically he was saying, no, why would a person wear two belts? It's not clear from the Gemara what exactly the conclusion is. Rashi over here offers two variant interpretations of the Gemara. Rashi writes, Trei Hamayin Kamart, Havadai Masu Huyavasar, Lashon Tamid Rabbeinu Yitzchak. So Rashi cites one pshat, and that is that that's a masui. If you're already wearing a belt and now you're putting on another belt on top of it, so what's the point of wearing the second belt? You already have the first belt holding everything up. That is Rashi's first pshat. But then Rashi quotes, "V'tamid Rabbeinu Halevi matzasim muter v'muter," and he cites another pshat, which is no, it's muter, meaning it's just two belts. Right, the way you would inflect when you read the Gemara is, oh, it's two belts, it's just a second belt, that's fine. Rashi certainly prefers the first pshat over the second pshat. You can see the continuation of Rashi where clearly he prefers the first pshat, that it would be aser. Right, and by the way, just in terms of like modern day application of the Gemara over here, when you talk about wearing layering of clothing, so what it sounds like according to Rashi's first pshat, which he prefers, is that if you're wearing a second layer of clothing that's serving no purpose, meaning if you're wearing a second layer of clothing because it's cold outside, obviously it's serving a purpose. But if you're wearing, let's say, a second belt on top of the first belt, and the second belt is just ornamental, but it's not serving any particular purpose, so according to Rashi, that would be also according to Rashi's first pshat. So if, let's say, somebody is wearing a secondary belt, right, the Hasidim, and some is dagdim wear a second belt in order for davening, So maybe you can make the same argument over there. On the other hand, you could also argue they're wearing it for davening, they're wearing it for tefillah. It's not just a secondary belt; it's a secondary belt that has purpose. Okay, so there is a practical point coming out from the Gemara. I mean, there always is, but that could be. Amar Rav Ashi, Hai Risuka. The Gemara now turns its attention to Risuka. It sounds like something like a cape, right? That's what Rashi says. Chatichas me'il rechva. Right, it's a long me'il. Okay, some long robe or long cape. So iisle mifarchisa shari v'ila wasser. Well, if it has straps that go into the loop that you're wearing, so either it's a cape worn, it's either looped into your pants or it's looped onto your shoulders. However, it's worn. So if it's looped in, it's tying in really well, so then it's going to be mutter. But if you're just kind of throwing it over your shoulders, so then it's going to be aser. The concern is that it's going to fall off, and you're going to end up carrying it for amos in a rishus harabim. And just to finish up today's daf, lo b'ketala, and a woman is also not allowed to go out with rings. The Gemara makes this point very clear. We said this we're almost there. Lo b'ketala, we're now talking about the choker. So my ketala menakta pari. We're talking about the choker that goes tight around the neck of the woman. We discussed a couple of days ago in detail the kinds of chokers that are worn by women. You took a look at the Rashi and Zayin Amud Beis, so we discussed the choker / bib that's worn by women. Anyway, a woman cannot go out with that on Shabbos for fear that, again, it's going to fall off her. She's going to and she's going to pick it and she's going to carry it for Amos in the Rosh Hashanah Rabbin. Continuing in the Gemara, now we'll get to finish up. So Nizamin, we're talking now about the rings. Nizmeyaf, we're talking about nose rings. Meaning that which is prohibited for a woman to wear in the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim is only going to be a nose ring. Earrings would be fine. What's the difference between a nose ring and an earring? Times have changed, by the way. Nose rings nowadays are a little more relegated to the non-traditionalists. But back in the day, the traditionalists were wearing nose rings. So, but what's the difference halachically? So Rashi over here says Nizmei Ha'af. So earrings, says Rashi, would be mutar lechatchila, even from the Mishnah standpoint. Why? So it would be a major pain to take off her earrings because it would be covered by all the things that are used to cover her hair. which is really interesting, meaning that she's wearing the earrings and while going out to the street because of that which she puts on her head, so the earrings are going to be covered. And so therefore, it would be too burdensome for her to take it off, and that's why the Chachamim were not worried about earrings. From the Rashi, it sounds like ears were covered. From the Rashi, it also sounds like the earrings were worn, even though they were not seen by the public. Okay? Certainly, again, like I said in the beginning of the Perek, there are a number of issues which are cultural in nature, and back then, so their dress, their mode of dress, obviously, was of a different culture. But anyway, so Rashi says, but the earrings in themselves would be fine for a woman to wear on Shabbos. It's the nose rings that would be prohibited, because again, she's excited, she got a new nose ring, she's going to show it off to her friend, and as a result of that, she may end up carrying it for Dal Amos Brishos Rabbim. Let's recap our daf today. We went through, on the Amud Aleph, we went through a basic discussion in terms of a bell without a clapper, where the Braisa taught us very clearly that's still going to maintain its tumma. Why? And so the big discussion that we had in the Amud Aleph is, do I need it to have its original usage, which, as we concluded in the Gemara, was a Shita Rav Yochanan, or no? As long as it has any usage, as long as it has some usage, like, for example, you can turn the bell and use it as a makeshift cup, so that would be fine as well. So that was the Gemara's discussion on the Amud Aleph. The conclusion of the Gemara is that according to Rav Yochanan, it has to be Me'ein Malach Rishona. In order for a Kli to maintain its status of being a Kli, even in its semi-broken state, it still must function as it originally served when it was not broken, when it was a Kli Shalem. The Gemara now, on the as we turn to the Amud Beis, discusses Yushalayim de Dahava, this fancy crown that was worn by some women, by very chashuv women. So can a woman go out with it on Shabbos? So there are three shitas amongst the Tanaim. Rabbi Meir says it's a masui, Chachamim say it's a takshit, but the Chachamim were worried that she was going to take it off and show it to her friends while walking in the street. And Rabbi Eliezer says mutter legamri, because the only women who were wearing it are only Isha Chashuva. The Gemara then discussed the Kalila, this tiara that's worn. We have a machlokes between Rav and Shmuel, two versions of the machlokes of Rav and Shmuel. As Rashi points out, the second version is certainly the preferred version of the Gemara, where if it's an embroidered tiara with just simply stones and gold embroidered into it, so everyone would say that that's fine. It's only when it's made up of gold or of silver, so then you have a machlokes between Rav and Shmuel. The Gemara went through the various communities in Bavel, where various Amoraim said that it was okay. Levi Narda said it was fine. In Mechuza, Rava Baravua says it was fine to wear it on Shabbos. Presumably they were talking about the embroidered version of it, presumably. And then the Gemara went on to discuss other articles of clothing. We discussed belts, we discussed capes, we discussed the choker, and then we discussed the nose rings worn by women. At Kam, we stop over here. Tomorrow we pick it up at the two dots.